Good morning, North America. Welcome to Church Talk TV, lively talk about life, church, and church life. I'm your co-host, Dr. Bill Tenney-Britton, and I'm joined, as usual, by my co-host, Dr. Chris Tenney-Britton, and we're broadcasting from our studio in Columbia, Missouri, the heartland of America. Say good morning, Chris.
Well, good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to Church Talk TV.
Chris and Bill Tenney-Britton here today to talk about the cliche, teamwork makes the dream work. And it is a cliche. It's a cliche as wide as the Pacific Ocean, to be fair. But it's a cliche because it's actually true. You know, Christianity was never meant to be a solo sport, and Christian leadership, church leadership, is definitely not a solo sport. Just like there's no Christianity without the church, there's no church leadership without a team, or at least a team, and probably some teams.
Some teams, I would say.
Generally speaking, right? Even okay. A small church needs multiple people doing multiple things.
What is it? There's no I in teams. I mean, we've heard that one said before.
More cliches that are also true.
That are very, very true, right? Yeah, I could say more. Lots of metaphors out there as well. But we're not going to do that because we do have a few things that we want to say and share today. Let me go ahead and say this up front, that we're going to mention this word called fractals. And it is a way of planning and putting your teams together. That's the focus that my esteemed husband, my Bill, has to share with you all. And there's a, what do you call those? It's not a workshop, a seminar, a webinar.
Oh, the Catalytic Conversations comes Thursdays at
tomorrow,
10 o'clock.
Right? Yeah, every week.
Facebook Live on our in our Facebook group, and as well as on Zoom. You can register. I'll put the link in the description down below. So you can go there. It's free. It's a one-hour webinar. We take what we talk about, normally the theme, and we go even deeper. It's me. She has to work it most of the time for these. This is a live event, so
yeah,
she works outside.
Oh, and you're like, I have to work it. Yes, I have to work during it.
Yeah, during it, right?
I work during it. I'm not available. Right. Okay. So there we go.
So, but and I want to say, just build on what you talk about fractals. A fractal is a repeating pattern. It's a mathematical thing. It's a nature thing. And I want to give credit to Wayne Cadero, the founder of New Hope Oahu in Hawaii, some years ago, and he wrote Doing Church as a Team. And he introduced that concept there. And the Effective Church Group was kind of in on the very beginning of him releasing that and talking about it. And we've taken it and run with it and expanded it and tweaked it and made it work for us and for the churches that we worked with and worked in, the church we started.
You're right, exactly. And churches we've pastored, we've done transitions over and over again.
And this is a model we recommend because it is an effective model and it's a scalable model for a church from 12 people or 6 people for that matter, all the way up to 6,000 or 16,000, and the model doesn't need to change. And the cool thing is in this pattern, you only ever supervise 4 people. Pastor, you supervise 4 people. Worship team leader, you do 4 people. Sunday school superintendent, you do 4 people. And it's less, and no matter how big the organization gets, you never have to deal with more than 4, which is a beautiful scalable model. We're not going to go into that. The workbook that we've offered this week, you can get it on Facebook, on my Facebook profile. You can find it there and download it. I'll probably stick it in the description down below again. But anyway, it goes more deeply into it. Of course, our book, Billy Sim and I wrote, Effective Staffing for Vital Churches, has a rather extensive chapter on that alone. But we want to talk about the teams and the roles of teams and the roles of the pastor in this episode. And so we have a lot to cover. And so let's jump in.
All right. So talking about teams, we've already mentioned how important it is to have a team. I've always been frustrated with board systems, council systems, whatever, where, we have committees, right? And so we're going to call them committees and the committee of one. And, you know, there's that person or this person says, well, I really think we should have a food pantry. And so we'll have our food pantry committee. But meanwhile, the food pantry committee is that person alone.
And then there's the other problem.
Go ahead.
Is where we have a church that is filled with committees And we read some book that says, you don't need committees, you should have teams. And so they change the name of all their committees to teams, but they don't change the structure of how people get put on there and all the rest. And a committee, folks, is not a team, okay? Right. They're like apples and rocks. Right. They're nothing alike.
Well, I like
they're not even fruit.
Okay, I tend to think of teams as, or I'm sorry, committees as usually being codified somewhere. They're in the bylaws, or you've got to have so many, whatever that is, right? You have to have so many, or they need to look like this, so many people on them and whatnot. We're teams.
And the people are nominated, and often the whole whole committee is often nominated. Right. We need four people to serve, so let's go find four people.
Right, and I know some of you are going, well, that's the way it is. It has to be that way. So I do want to toss out that you can transition from where you are into teams without just changing the names.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
So please hear that, and you can contact us for tips for how to do it or to help you with that transition. But teams, I like to think of teams as being people who like each other, you know, and so
they want to work with each other.
Right. I mean, committees, how I still remember this. When we first got together, the church that we were going to, they these committees had to meet every month before the board and do a board report. And so we were on the evangelism committee, and we would go, and the person would write down like what we had talked about in that meeting, which basically was what we didn't do over the month before.
We're not doing anything. We need to do something, but we're have not
to,
doing
but you have to write it down, and nothing happened. We didn't talk to each other except to say hello when we saw each other in worship. Whereas a team, you don't even, and I've been saying this since even before Zoom ever was thought of, that a team, people get on the phone with one another. They're talking, they're doing things, they're making plans, they're working together.
And they have a passion for it. Every member has a passion for whatever is that the purpose of that team.
Right.
Whereas the committee is, do you have a pulse? Let's put you
basically,
on it.
Basically. Yeah. Or I'll do it, right? Again, are you familiar with the sound of these words? Okay, I'll do it if nobody else will. I mean, teams don't operate don't operate that way. Oh, yeah, I want to be part of that, right? You want to be part of a team, not dreading that you're on there. I think about like little league teams and whatnot, how excited they get. So we've got to have teams. We can't just be working everywhere. And when we streamline that and we realize, wow, we only need four basic teams in our ministry, right? And then four in our administrative structures, things begin to change. It's exciting. Okay, so need for teams. Do you want to say more about that?
No, we're done. We got to move on. Right. We got a lot to cover.
So you go with the role of the lead pastor.
I want to talk about, we're going to talk about the role of the lead pastor. We're going to talk about the role of the board. We're going to talk about the role of the ministry team and the role of the administrative team. And you know, we're not going to talk so much about the structure. That's a different conversation. And again, join us for the catalytic conversation, get our downloads, read the book. But I want to talk about the roles, because the roles are important, because the problem in most churches is the roles are very confused and they're very enmeshed. There's not real true, this is your role, this is your role, stay out of my lane, I'll stay out of your lane. We work together. Right, exactly.
Yeah,
so let's start with the role of the lead pastor. And let me say that I teach pastoral leadership at Phillips Seminary. In fact, I'm getting ready to start teaching that next week. And I want to say that I do a lot more training on leadership, and I do no training on pastoring. That pastoring is, they have another course for that. I teach leadership. And what I often say, and people get a lot of pushback here, but the church right now, by and large, needs a lot fewer pastors and a whole lot more leaders standing up front and leading. Because pastors, your God-given role in the church is to lead the church. And, well, they're a shepherd. Yes, and the shepherd goes out front and the sheep follow. That's how leadership works. The leader is out front making decisions, setting the course, setting the direction and, you know, where we're going, and saying, oh, we got to go detour here, detour there. They lead. That's the role of a shepherd. Mm-hmm. It is not to hold hands, sing kumbaya, and take care of the sheep. Okay? Jesus left the 99 and went after the one that was lost. It's leading. Anyway, so the role of the lead pastor is to lead. And that means leading in the creating and attaining and aligning the DNA, the mission, the values, the vision. This is who we are. This is why we're here. This is what's important to us. And this is where we're going. That is not a committee decision. God so loved the world, he didn't send a committee. He raised up a pastor. Pastor, that's your role, is to lead, to grow the church, to make more disciples, to help the congregation make more disciples, not to sit in your desk and manage. It's leadership.
Well, it's not just about helping your people or teaching them and leading them and making more disciples. It's also about raising up leaders. I mean, that's really important, because one of the classes I teach at Phillips, it's like a complimentary class, and you know, when you come to it, is education and leader development. And when I started teaching that,
it often sounds like when you say that you're raising up Sunday school teachers,
right? Well,
and it's not that.
Originally, it was Christian education and leader development. And I said, and I tell them up front, okay, here's a book. We got to read it because it talks about Sunday school and doing that stuff. But we're going to talk about faith development because we have to, and that's what we need to do. But what this is really about, what it's really about, is how are you going to raise up other leaders?
See, we have no problem hijacking courses to train our pastors to be effective leaders in the church.
Exactly. And they're doing it. I'm so proud of our students who come through the Center for Ministry and Lay Training at Phillips Seminary. So there's a shout out for you. Leslie Robles-Sear, you might want to give her a ring. Anyways, that role of the lead pastor is also raising up leaders who will raise up other leaders. And as you were talking, I just kept thinking, you know, about shepherding, and I can hear some of you saying, every month, though, I have to report on how many people I visited.
How many members I visited, not the in-church.
Right, yeah. How many shut-ins I visited, hospital visited, how many sermons I preached. Hello? How many sermons do you preach?
Weren't they there? Or two a week.
Yeah, like, weren't they there to hear the sermons, right? So, and then you are the one who reports on how many guests we had, how many visitors. But that's not, we're not talking in a bigger picture than that. Lead, pastor, lead. And that means then, too, transitioning your board's way of thinking. And I did that years and years and years ago in churches that I served in. It was like, you know what, y'all? This is not important stuff. I'm not going to report on that. This is what I'm going to report on. This is the number of conversations I had in the community. And you can do that. If you don't think you can, give us a call, email us. We're absolutely serious. This is so important.
Growing Church Network will walk you through this process.
There it is. All right.
One thing you said I want to build on, because then we're going to jump into the rest of it, is one thing you said was raising up leaders.
Right.
And one of your jobs, Pastor, is in your role, is, as you say, to raise up other leaders.
That's right.
Raising up leaders for your board.
Yeah.
It ought not be a whoever we want and, you know, let me be on the board. A board should be made up of people who are faithful disciples of Jesus Christ, number one. Number two, they're sold out to the DNA of the church, the mission, the vision, the values, and they support that with their time, their talent, their treasure, and their testimony.
Right.
They're out there actually sharing the good news of Jesus and the good news of the church in the community. If they're not doing it, they're not leadership quality. Mm-hmm. And that's just the bottom line is. And so that's part of your job. We're going to talk about what we call your dream teams. And your role as the pastor is to help fill those dream teams with the people who are committed to the mission and the vision and will back you and back you into a corner if you're out of line in your office one-on-one to have that conversation, not in front of the board.
In appropriate ways.
Right, in appropriate ways, exactly. But so they're not all yes people, but you don't put antagonists on there either.
Right.
So,
Well, are we going to say more about the board and the board construct?
We're about ready to jump in.
I thought that's what you were going to say.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to say, that part of your job is to find them, and now we move on to the next.
And not just find them, it's to develop them.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, if we can be doing pre-development, we see that. So knowing our people's gifts, knowing what they do in their lives, right? Because as you were talking again, you know, what kept coming to my mind is that you want people who understand making decisions, depending on the size of your church, maybe big decisions. If you know you've got financial campaigns coming up, if you've got major capital issues, people who hopefully have banking or accounting kind of background.
I want to back you up a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't don't think you mean what you're saying.
Okay,
because
why?
Because a board doesn't make decisions. It does policy.
I know that. I totally understand
all right.
that.
But that's
they
not
don't,
what...
but they've got to understand the issues so they can then work
but
with the policy.
But I don't want our viewers to understand that or think that we're talking about a board that makes decisions, because that's not, we have an admin team who makes decisions.
Right, we're going to go there, but I am saying for the boards, you need people who understand this
Absolutely.
Stuff. You cannot ask them
right.
to set policy to say, yeah, this is what we need to do, or just to take it and be yes, women and men, right? I mean, you need people who understand this kind of stuff.
So let's take it back to the basics there, because you're talking about who put on it, and yes, you need people who get it, but...
Go ahead. You're going in a different direction.
Well, the role of the board.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about.
Okay, that's what we got to do.
Right. The role of the board is we got to move from decision making, that they manage the decisions of the church. How many pencils are we going to buy? How many, or what time or when are we going to schedule vacation Bible school? That's not a board issue.
The board.
Okay. The board issue is to set policy, number one, and number two, to hold the pastor accountable for achieving the mission and attaining the vision. And they hold the pastor accountable, and pastor, your job is to hold everybody else accountable.
That's right.
You know, to get her done.
Right.
But if the music minister or the worship director isn't doing the job, the board doesn't go to the worship director or call the worship director in on the carpet. The board calls the pastor in on the carpet and says, "Why aren't you doing something with this? We got someone who's making a mess out of things, pastor. That's your job." Because the pastor manages all the ministerial staff. And through the fractals, and again, da-da-da. But here's, again, the board's job is to set policy. Policy is, we have a wedding coming up, they want to have champagne. Is it okay to have alcohol? That's a policy issue. Is it okay to have alcohol in the fellowship hall? That's a policy. It is okay, it's not okay, it can only be here,
sure.
Whatever.
Well,
those are policy issues.
What do we do when we get large memorial gifts? What do we do when...
They're setting policies, and that's what the board does. The board doesn't do the other stuff. Now, we're going to talk about what the other teams do, because there are decision makers that need to be made, need to be in place, but it's not the board. The board sets policy and oversees the pastor. That's their role. That's their job. And to support the pastor in making sure that the pastor is has the resources in terms of the support of the congregation, they should be championing the pastor,
right?
And championing the mission, championing the vision,
right.
And saying, "Hey, rah rah, this is what we're doing and where we're going," because our pastor's leading us there.
Yeah, well, I've had the opportunity to sit on a major nonprofit board, multi-million-dollar nonprofit. I've also had the opportunity to facilitate two amazing boards myself. Like, that's once I started getting to understand this stuff. And one of the precepts, if you will, that is so important is that, pastor, you've got to meet with your board chair or your council chair,
right.
Your whatever chair it is, president,
history,
whatever. That whatever, whoever that person is. So you meet with them. If you're not talking to them throughout the month, right, and just doing check-in, you're developing a leader, right? So you're checking in with them. You're praying with them. Like, let's bring the spiritual piece back into that. But the other piece of that then is you're going to sit down with them before your board meetings, and you're going to go through the agenda that you draw up, and then you give them the opportunity to add anything to the agenda, to talk about strategies, what they may need to do, and be open and have that conversation. Now, here's what I notice is that a lot of pastors, lead pastors, and solo pastors, you're afraid of your board chair.
You're
afraid of you and your own leadership, quite honestly, that you sit in fear in a lot of ways. Your esteem isn't where it could be.
Or should be, or needs to be for leading.
Yeah, I was just being nice. But you got to get over it. You have got to be a leader. And there are ways to develop that gift. There are ways to step out of that can become more comfortable. Because what happens is a lot of pastors assert themselves and in very
confrontational and
unhealthy
ways.
Right. dysfunctional, like we could say more and more about that. So role of the lead pastor, very, very important, especially with how you work with your board and the leader of your board.
And again, you should have at least input. One of the things I say is the lead pastor must have veto power for any position in the church. Hey, we want to put so-and-so in. Pastor needs to be able to say with full impunity, without having to share a reason why, says, no, that won't work.
Okay, so here's, because I've run into that over the years, and without sharing the reason why, up front, you work with that board up front, whether it's a long-reaching board or whatever.
Or your SPRC
whoever those people are, or your what I call an executive committee, it's your officers. You start there, and you say something along the lines of, I know things about people that in all confidentiality, I can't share.
That's right.
And so when I say no, or this is not a good idea,
or this person is not able to serve.
Well, I haven't made it quite like that. I mean, it's enough when I say no, or no, or please no, or this is not good, a good time, then I always have arranged that you receive that. And that's a kind of
and
a trust
that.
Thing.
Not just receive it.
Yeah, that well, honor right. It. That's what right. I'm saying is yeah. honoring it. That you don't call that person, and that's important. And you can't give too much information because you may give information about Barney Smith, and then they're going to want that from Mary Joseph, and you know Mary Joseph is beating her husband. And they still want to do that, but they expect an explanation because you gave it about Barney Smith. Less is more.
Right.
Less is more.
Yeah. And if they don't trust you, you don't want to be in that church anyway. That's the bottom
right.
line. Right. Okay. You have to ask yourself, and Bill Eason was one who drilled this into us.
Yeah.
Is this a calling or a career?
Yeah.
If you're keeping the job because you're afraid of losing your job, then it's not a calling. You know, you lead, and if they won't accept leadership, then you. Well, some guy said something about dusting the dust, shaking
the
dust
off
your shoes, and go find someplace else.
Yep.
That's just the bottom line, is folks. Is it a calling or career? If it's a calling, you lead.
Right.
That's just how it is. And if it costs you your job, then it costs you your job. You move on. All right. So we got the role of the lead pastor pretty much settled. We got the role of the board pretty much settled. Now let's talk about the two main teams. And these are the fractal teams.
Right.
There's the group, typically groups of four. It doesn't have to be, but that's the norm. And so a role of the ministry team is to, and this is your primary dream team.
Sure.
Their role, their job, their responsibility, and they must have the authority, is to plan, implement, and manage ministry. Their job, you know, in whether it's in worship or connecting people or discipleship or sending out neighborhood missionaries, whatever that is, and getting people in, keeping people stay, turn them into disciples, and sending them out as neighborhood missionaries, their jobs is to make all the decisions, of course, you're in that group, to make all the decisions when it comes to ministry at your church.
Okay, I want to add one more. You said plan, implement, and manage ministry.
Yeah.
I want to add measure.
I think
you know, you're implying that, but I want to be explicit
absolutely.
About that.
Yeah.
And
it's part of management, but it is,
right,
it needs
right.
to be mentioned.
It needs to be mentioned. And lead pastor, then that's the head of each of these teams. You're working with them because you are measuring, but they need to be measuring their effectiveness
right.
as well. So these four ministry teams really fall into place with what your mission vision is.
Yeah, your mission vision,
are. Yeah. Yeah, so usually you get a worship
invite,
right? So, see, different churches will do it differently.
Right,
invite.
I've seen worship in the invite fractal.
Yes,
and I've seen worship in the connect fractal.
Yes,
I've never seen the other two fractals, but I've seen it bounce around.
I've seen worship in its own fractal. I don't recommend it, but I've seen it.
Yeah, I saw a 5-part fractal once.
Right,
then they did worship as a 5th part, which is
wow.
it's fine.
Okay,
it's however it works for y'all. But the four key strategies to grow a church, you got to get, in
yes,
the words of
yes.
in the words of Bill Eason, you got to get the butts in the seats.
Butts in the seats.
You
got to
keep the butts in seats long enough so you can disciple them and disciple them well enough so that they become disciples and missionaries in the community.
And go.
And they go out. They go back out. So invite, connect, disciple.
Go.
Send.
Go.
Anyway, so, I mean, those are typically the four ministry areas. And that covers every ministry in your church. Right. It falls into one of those four. And their role is just, I mean, they do it all. So instead of what often happens is, and I was in a church that did this, we had a great policymaking board. That's what they did. And the worship team and the education team, discipleship team, got together and said, we think we need to have a second worship service. Right now, we had to. They said, it's at 8 o'clock, and we really need to have that at a different time, but Sunday school is in the middle. And so everyone agreed we would take Sunday school and divide it into, you know, you could go this class or this class, and we would move worship and worship together and do simultaneous education. They made that decision. It was a good decision. Then they informed the board. They didn't ask the board's permission. They just informed the board, and they told the board when the dates would be. That is how the ministry team is meant to operate. They make the decisions about ministry in connection with each other.
Now, if you're in a smaller or even a medium-sized church, if you're in a congregation that used to be significantly larger than you are now, or just even larger than you are, you maybe want to say, we just don't have enough volunteers. We just don't have enough people. There are more positions than there are people. Everybody's serving on 10 different committees. You know what? This is why fractals are so important.
Because you only need four.
You just need four. And then each one of those is going to raise up their team. And you,
as needed. And
as needed.
And sometimes they don't need a team.
Well, and sometimes your team is your team. And the pastor is going to help you to raise up your team. It's as you said, scalable. We've seen it in the smallest of churches, and we've seen it in large churches as well.
Yep, that's right. Okay, so that's the role of the ministry team. The last team we have is the role of the administrative team. The administrative team, their job is to resource the ministry team. They're there to make sure that the ministry team has everything
that's
they need to get the ministry done.
That's right.
So there's a finance team.
Yeah.
Okay. Their job is not to count the pennies, although they should do that.
That's got
to
be.
But their primary mission is to make sure there's money to fund the ministry team.
So, in too many of our churches that we're watching, that basically everything that gets done is approved by the finance committee,
right,
or whoever has
control. You can't do that because we can't afford it.
I've watched a whole treasurer several times, a treasurer be the one who decides what ministry doesn't get done, right?
They hold them hostage.
They hold those push strings quite literally. So I just love saying to finance teams, stewardship teams, whatever they want to call them, hey, you know what? Your job isn't to say no. Your job is to say, how are we going to make it happen?
That's
and
right.
Then you do.
And that's the question. How are we going to make this happen? And, you know, and that may mean that they have to juggle figures. It may mean they have to figure out how to bring in more money. It may mean a lot of things, but it's never no. It's how are we going to do this? How? That's the job. Okay, so there's a finance team. There's normally an HR team or a team that does with the
personnel,
if you will. Your SPRC, if you're a Methodist, and some of the other
PRC,
churches.
PRR, yep,
exactly.
Yeah.
Then you have the building and grounds people who, you know, sometimes they're called trustees, but they're the ones who manage the property. And then you have an office support or an administrative support.
Yeah,
they're the ones who, you know, they're the ones who are running copies, who make sure there's a copy machine.
Answer
your phone.
Back up your pastor.
Right, et cetera, et cetera. It does the calendaring and so
they're
on and so forth.
They're the church mice who are so important.
Right, and so those are the four teams. And pastor, you're a part of that team as well. So.
Yes, all the teams.
Yeah.
The pastor's part of all the teams, but what you're doing is working with the core leaders in those teams.
Right.
Those inner four are the ones that you work with.
Right. You're not going to their team meetings
unless
there's a really good reason occasionally, because occasionally you will.
Right.
But you don't make a habit of it.
Right.
Put people in leadership you trust.
Right.
then trust them to do their work.
Okay, but you're going to have to go to those meetings in the beginning, and until those, until they get developed, especially. But I know a lot of pastors who have said, "Oh yeah, you know, okay, I've got these people in place, and just hey, have at it, bless you." Yeah. No, no,
that's,
and
that's
no.
That's called abdication, and you don't get to abdicate leadership.
We're going to call it hand holding, is what we need to do. Okay,
all right.
Ready?
All right, hey, we are out of time.
I'll tell you.
But you've got a good handle, I hope, from the even though it was very brief. You understand, I hope, the role of the lead pastor, the role of the board, the role of your ministry team, and the role of your admin team. And if you understand those roles and you begin working towards that, you will have truly a dream team of leadership.
So we got a book that you can read, right?
Effective Staffing for Vital Churches.
That's right. You've got a handout is there.
Handout there.
You've got a conversation going on tomorrow.
That's right.
Yep, and that'll get you set. And there's always so much more phone calls, meetings we can do with you.
All right. Hey, good to see you. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week.
Have a great week. Bye.
Bye-bye.